This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. And again, your number is 877-217-5757. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email address. And these are fascinating times and, in many cases, tragic times. In the journalism, in the midst of COVID-19 and now this reaction to the what amounted to a murder of George Floyd last week in Minneapolis, has been remarkable. Peter Baker of the New York Times in Sunday's edition says, with a nation on edge, ravaged by disease, hammered by economic collapse, divided over lockdowns and even face masks, now convulsed once again by race, President Trump's first instinct is to look for someone to fight. Over the last week, America reeled from more than 100,000 pandemic deaths, 40 million people out of work, cities in flames over a brutal police killing of a subdued black man. But Mr. Trump, writes Baker, was on the attack against China, the World Health Organization, big tech, former President Barack Obama, a cable television host, and the mayor of a riot-torn city. While other presidents seek to cool the situation in tinderbox moments like this, Mr. Trump plays with matches. He roars into any melee he may find, encouraging street uprisings against public health measures advanced by his own government, hurling made-up murder charges against a critic, accusing his predecessor of unspecified crimes, vowing to crack down on a social media company that angered him, and then seemingly threatening to meet violence with violence in Minneapolis. As several more cities erupted in street protests after the killing of George Floyd, some of them resulting in clashes with police, Mr. Trump made no appeal for calm. Instead, he blamed the unrest on Democrats. The turmoil came right to Mr. Trump's doorstep Friday night as hundreds of people protesting Mr. Floyd's death and the president's response gathered outside the White House. Some threw bricks and bottles at Secret Service and United States Park police officers who responded with pepper spray. The image of the White House surrounded by police and riot gear fueled the sense of a nation torn apart. That's where we are on June 1st, 2020. 877-217-5757. Joining us now is documentary filmmaker Cindy Hurst, a Baton Rougean, now living in the great city of Little Rock. She was with us a decade ago with her documentary, Natural Woman, and it was about hair care and the devotion that many African-American women have to their hairstyles. And we're going to talk with her about that because COVID-19 changed hair for a lot of us, including yours truly. But this is a more serious matter that we're talking about that erupted after Cindy was booked for our show. And Cindy, you are in Little Rock. I know they've had protests there, and tear gas was used yesterday, unfortunately, and the law enforcement felt it was necessary. But obviously the nation is torn apart again over the issue of race. What do you think about where we are at this point?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, Jim. This nation right now, it is in crises on so many different planes, so many different levels. The black community, once again, are dealing with yet another tragic death of a black human being with little or no justice, or late justice, to say the least. The rioting, I understand a lot of the anger, but we just, it seems like a no-win situation. If we are rioting peacefully by kneeling, the president referred to us as sons of bitches. If we are rioting, showing our, you know, unity, you know, in the streets, chanting, we are called thugs. So it seems as though we're not able to voice our anger, our rage, our despair in this country. It seems like we have no platform. We have no legitimate voice. And the only thing I could say is that I hope that the protests continue and that eventually we're going to see some kind of justice for these past three murders in the last, 2 months. We've had three people, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and now George Floyd. So it's terrible.
It is indeed, and many people independent of law enforcement, public officials, others are beginning to speak out on this, and I'm waiting for some of the LSU athletic icons to speak out. Nick Saban, as he often is ahead of the pack. The Alabama coach, former LSU coach, has a very long description of his feelings, and he mentions the three tragic deaths that you just cited, Cindy. He says, we're at an important moment for our country. Now is the time for us to choose kindness, tolerance, understanding, empathy, and most importantly, it's time to love each other. Every life is precious, and we must understand we have so many more things that unite us than divide us. And maybe that's wishful thinking on the part of Nick Saban, but violent protests, as Hiller Moore said, are much different than nonviolent protests. Nonviolent protesting is appropriate, and it is welcomed at this time. But it only takes a few people to turn a nonviolent encounter in which a statement is being made appropriately into a violent one in which people may end up getting killed. So, Cindy, how do we calm the masses, obviously and justifiably inflamed by what's happened, to not respond with violence to the violence that was perpetrated on George Floyd and the other two people you mentioned?
Well, I'm not sure. I think that you're always going to have, a peppered group of people. You're going to always have some people who are going to express their anger and their rage, and in some cases their righteous indignation in different ways. I think that in this case you may have particularly the first night of protests for the George Floyd's murder, I think that there was a lot of anger, there was a lot of rage, and I think that people, everyone has a tipping point, and I think that those things are going to happen. Even more recently, they're saying now that they are, they have different groups, different right-wing groups that are coming out and trying to provoke these types of things of happening. But I mean, let's just be honest about it. When you look at the history of this country, violent protests, we're no stranger to that. For many, many centuries, America has used fire, burning crosses, and other types of things in this country. And to see right now that you actually have people in the street burning things and showing rage and anger, these things aren't new to America. And I don't condone the violence. I understand some of it. But by the same token, America has to recognize the path that she's set and the role that America has played in these types of violent protests.
John in New Roads writes, did you ever think you would live to see the day when street fighting closed Washington, D.C.? No school, no jobs, many don't have food. What happens in July when Patrick, one of your frequent callers, gets his way in their mass evictions? 877-217-5757. Our guest is documentary filmmaker Cindy Hurst of Baton Rouge, now living in Little Rock. David in Atlanta. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. You know, when Colin Kaepernick tried a peaceful protest to bring to the attention of the American people the senseless violence and murder against African Americans by police officers, he was pretty much excoriated and condemned for it. I don't blame the rioters. I don't condone it, but I don't blame the rioters because America had its chance to bring awareness to the senseless killing of African Americans, and they essentially did nothing. So what else could African American people do? We need a higher sense of awareness. to what's happening to African-American people, and the American people said we're not interested.
All right, you're not advocating violence, I hope, David.
No, I said I'm not condoning the violence, okay. But I understand it.
Okay, that's different. Thank you, Cindy. I'm sure you largely agree with David's sentiments.
I do agree. Again, I don't condone it at all. However, I do understand it. I understand the rage. I'm an African-American. My son is black. You know, you don't understand the feeling that, you know, when the phone rings and it's, you know, sometimes my mother may call me or my sister or somebody may call me, you know, and at moments there are thoughts of, oh, my God, I hope nothing has happened to my son. Those thoughts are not natural for anybody to think. So I do understand the anger, and I do understand the rage. And let's just be clear, the large majority of people who are protesting are not doing those things. It just seems as though when those things are happening and drawn to the attention that black people are somehow, if we express our rage and our anger in such ways that we are somehow, you know, maniacs or, you know, we can't control ourselves or, you know, something to that effect, that it's not natural. And it that's not true.
877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. Talk@talklouisiana.org is our email address. We'll close it out with Cindy Hurst in our final segment, documentary filmmaker. And John in New Roads has smoked out Patrick in Inniswald. We'll start with Patrick when we return after this 2-minute timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. More time with Cindy Hurst, documentary filmmaker. We'll talk about her legacy, and she made quite an impression a decade ago with Natural Woman. This is the 10th anniversary of that well-received documentary, but right now she's talking about what's going on in our world as an African-American woman in a world in which we have had violence perpetrated on black people, and let's face it, last Monday for no good reason. 877-217-5757 is your number. Patrick in Inniswald Estates. Patrick, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, good morning. I think your guest and whoever more before you kind of made a good point. There's a difference between protesters and people that are rioters. And I don't think it helps. It looks like we got some Antifa forces that are giving this protest a really bad name. And they are the ones doing the violent, destroying American property, taxpayer property, private property. They're destroying American monuments. That shows they hate America. When you see that, it definitely doesn't help the message that the protesters are trying to bring out. And the other thing, though, is, like, you know, it seems like the system's working here. The guy's been arrested. He's going to be facing manslaughter or murder charges. And everybody's in agreement that this police officer was in the wrong. So I wonder who they're protesting exactly, because everyone's in agreement here. And all I see is, you know, I see destruction of property, interstates being blocked, a truck driver fearing for his life. I mean, we saw what happened in 92 in the Rodney King riots when the truck driver was beaten to death or almost to death. I can understand why a truck driver is going to go through a crowd like that at 35 miles an hour. He's probably fearing for his life. It's just diminishing the message, I think, the rioters are doing.
All right. Thank you, Patrick. Cindy?
I don't think that everyone is in agreement. I think that that charges have been filed. We're happy about that. However, the other officers haven't been charged. The family of George Floyd is hoping to get a murder in the first degree charge against the police officer. So for the most part, I think that they have done something, but it isn't what we want done wholeheartedly. And I also think that this isn't our first rodeo with this. So I guess I consider myself an optimistic pessimist of sorts, I'm hoping that this time that we, this country, will finally be able to sit down and have a talk about race, because that's what is needed. We need justice for these people, but we also need, as a country, to be able to sit down and have a conversation about race.
Sabash at the Country Club of Louisiana. Hi, Sabash. You're on with Cindy Hurst.
Good morning to you both. And the previous caller's attitude is the basis for this society's violent attitude toward the minorities. The problem is, it is not just one person killed by the police. It is that no arrest was made. There was nothing done until the protest came. We should condemn the violence, but the violence came from the police first.
Cindy?
Did he say that violence came from the police first?
Yes, he did.
Absolutely. I agree. We wouldn't be having any of these conversations at all if that police officer did not have his knee on George Floyd's neck. So the violence did come there, you know, but let's be clear, this country was built on violence. So again, these are issues that are far deeper than police violence against black people. This is a lot of historical anger and a lot of historical violence that has been on a continuum. This isn't anything new. This is this country perpetrating acts of violence. This is nothing new.
It was A-Trap Brown, who grew up right here in Baton Rouge, worked at Joe Delpit's Chicken Shack, who said violence is an American as cherry pie.
Yes.
Cindy, this was intended to be a more lighthearted conversation, but in the COVID age, most communities saw barbershops and beauty salons closed down. Some of them still are. Some of us went a long time without a haircut. And for African-American women, this is a particular problem, because you obviously take, many do, take great pains to look well and do a lot of things to make that happen. So you did the documentary Natural Woman. I'm sure you were fully aware of some of the travails people were going through at this time.
Well, actually, I think since the 10 years ago, a lot of women have learned how to embrace their natural hair. And for the most part, from what I gather, the, you know, being isolated, being self-quarantined, hasn't really been that big of a deal. I think I kind of liken black women and hair is kind of like a marriage of sorts. And it's almost like if you can find yourself in quarantine with your partner or your mate for a long period of time, and you may do you may get to know each other, you know, a little bit better. You may decide that, hey, you know, let me, you know, see what you like. And I see a lot of women are trying different products and really kind of finding out, you know, what their hair is embracing, what their hair likes, what their hair texture is liking a little bit as far as the products are concerned. And then, of course, you just have some women who just can't wait to get back to the salon because they just don't enjoy doing their hair in general. But I think for the most part, women and natural hair has really turned into a happy marriage of sorts.
Now, a lot of guys shaved their heads during this period, and I suspect some women did too.
Well, I know that that my cousin, she lives in Dallas, she shaved her head a long time before this, but I did speak to some women, and they have cut their hair to make it a little bit more manageable. But for the most part, women who have natural hair, we've been, like myself, nothing has really changed because I am used to styling my hair myself. It's easier for me. It's when we start doing things that is not natural, that's when kind of like the problems come in, when you want to go and get the relaxers and colors and things like that. Those are the things that, you know, we really need professionals to do for us.
Matt in Mid-City says, I was Cindy's editor for a documentary. I was so happy to hear she was going to be on the show this morning. Editing her documentary really enlightened me a lot about issues of black people that they deal with, and as a white person, I would never have known it. My question is, what's one thing you really want white people to understand about what the black community is currently feeling? This from Matt in Mid-City.
I just want them to have just like a greater sense of empathy. And I guess empathy means literally to put yourself in someone's shoes. And if you were to imagine that the type of killings that were happening to black people as a whole were happening to white people, imagine your son, imagine your husband or your brother, uncle or whomever, was going through this. If you would wake up and every day you would see these types of murders, just try to understand our pain.
Well, Cindy has been with yours truly a few times in a few different shows, independent of this one. And one time we had a discussion about Muhammad Ali that was prompted by a conversation she and I had many years ago about our mutual love for the champ. And Cindy, I think first time I ever had a conversation with her, she informed me that Muhammad Ali was the first man she ever saw naked. Now, you're laughing. There is a story behind this, and I think we better tell it. Otherwise, people will be, I think, somewhat concerned, and maybe they'll be wondering what's going on there. But how did that happen?
Yeah, it's a story that's probably added some subliminal trauma to my life. When I was a little girl, my dad took us to Houston, and during that time, he was there for a fight. This was back in the 60s.
Well, actually, I think it was Jimmy Ellis who told me. That would have been 1971.
Was it 70? Yeah, okay. Yeah, it was that fight. My dad did confirm that. But at any rate, my dad put me on his shoulders. At that time, he was Muhammad Ali was practicing or getting dressed behind this partition, and my dad lifted me up on his shoulders to see if I could see him. And he said, can you see him? And I was like, yeah, I can see him. He said, well, what's he doing? I said, he's naked. And my dad, you know, kind of took me down, and he was like, oh, my goodness. So I got a chance to see Muhammad Ali as a young girl naked.
Well, and he was the most beautiful man in the world. In addition to being the toughest guy in the world, I suspect any man since has had trouble competing with the champ. Cindy, thank you. We're out of time, but always a pleasure, and keep up your good work. And Muhammad Ali, by the way, the anniversary of his death, June 3rd, 4 years ago this week, for the greatest fighter of all time. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support for Talk Louisiana. Until tomorrow, for Matt Doyle, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.